I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sorry, I had to change the microphone for this Tuesday, the 22nd of September. American divided, political partisanship and U.S. foreign policy this hour. And our guest is author of that study. She is Dina Smeltz, Senior Fellow of Public Opinion and Foreign Policy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. And she has a wealth of experience in designing and fielding international social, political, and foreign policy surveys. She was Director of Research in the Middle East and South Asia Division and Director of the European Division in the Bureau of Intelligence and Research at the U.S. State Department. And she has a special emphasis in post-conflict situations. She's worked with research teams in Bosnia, Kosovo, Cyprus, Israel, Palestinian territories, and also in Iraq. It's a very interesting survey that shows that the American public remains committed to engagement in the world, as it has for the more than 40 years that the Council has conducted its surveys. But if you look at specific policies, public opinion often divides along party lines. So we'll be welcoming phone calls for Dina as we ask you during this hour, what do you consider the major threats that America faces in 2015, and how should we respond to those threats? And we'll see from you if we can experience this partisan divide. For you to join our conversation this hour, our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Dina, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you for having me on this morning.
I'm very interested in the work you've done all over the world, and we will get to that as we talk this hour. But let's look at, I guess, that one thing that no matter where you are in the partisan divide, you can agree 64% in your survey do say the U.S. should play an active role in world affairs.
Yes, that's correct. 2 in 3 Americans say that the United States should take an active part in world affairs rather than stay out of world affairs. And this is actually a bit of an incline since last time we did a survey in 2014 when it was 58%. And we see this incline really stemming from increased concern about terrorism and the rise of violent Islamic extremist groups in the Middle East.
So when you look from last year to this year, you see an increase of, this is, seems to be significant, 6 percentage points from last year.
That's correct. And that, as I said, it's mostly because of groups like ISIS that seem to have increased the threat levels among the American public.
And yet independents, a sizable minority of independents, think that we should stay clear of world affairs.
That's correct. And that is that's an increasing pattern that we see. And independents are interesting. So we ask people which political party they feel closest to. And if people say they're independent, we follow that up and ask them, do you lean toward a specific party? And almost half of those people who describe themselves as independents say they actually lean toward Republicans and Democrats. And then the rest, just a little more than half, we consider pure independence, and it's actually those pure independents who really drag down that number. 50% of pure independents say we should stay out of world affairs.
Mm-hmm. When you look at these two threats that people feel are most important, a major terrorist attack in the U.S. by those Islamic extremist groups and more broadly international terrorism, these certainly are issues, aren't they, Dina, that plague us, and it is so hard to figure out what course of action.
Yes, it's true. It's almost like Americans seem to support every option that we put forth in terms of taking care of or combating terrorism. Everything from using social media to try to compete with recruiters from these different groups to using U.S. ground troops to try to combat terrorists and to attack their training facilities. So there's a really broad range of actions Americans support: U.S. airstrikes against terrorist training camps, drone strikes to assassinate individual leaders, even the NSA continuing to collect data to identify links to potential terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it is a continuing concern. The survey shows we have asked a question since the 1990s about terrorism, and fear of terrorism isn't quite as high as it was just after the September 11th attacks, but it's higher than it's been in a couple of years.
I'm interested. I know you did this a few years ago, but I know you were one of the few people on the ground who did reporting of average Iraqis' impressions of their post-war situation. Mm-hmm. Did they look at terrorism as a big issue in that country post-war?
I don't know. I would say yes in terms of insurgency types of attacks. Security was a really major issue for them. Just even walking down the street in their neighborhood, when I was there and doing surveys there. So that was security and electricity were really two big plaguing issues for them.
Mm-hmm. And the threats that people mentioned, 60% agreeing that these are the largest issue, is there a huge partisan divide as to what it is we're supposed to do to combat this threat?
So there are partisan divides throughout the survey, but terrorism is actually one of the issues where there is really a lot of consensus across partisanship. Even independents who generally want to stay out of getting entangled into international situations, even they, in majorities, support taking all those actions that I mentioned before. The main issues that that Republicans, Democrats, and Independents differ on are on what they see as actually the top threats. Iran is more of a grave threat to Republicans, or the Iranian nuclear program, to be specific. And climate change is a bigger issue for Democrats than it is for other partisans. And then immigration, especially illegal immigration, is a much more pressing threat to Republicans than to Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's center on climate change for a moment, because everybody's anticipating that the Pope is going to talk about this issue when he arrives in the U.S. Probably he'll speak before Congress on this issue and many others. One of the most polarizing issues, this poll yours shows, in American public opinion.
Yes, it's the most polarizing topic. It's almost a 40 percentage point gap between Republicans and Democrats. Yeah, who see climate change as a significant threat to the United States, and also as limiting climate change as a very important goal. So it's one of the top five pressing threats for Democrats, and it's the lowest threat among Republicans. So there's a really big difference there. And I think part of this stems from different understandings of climate change. Democrats are more likely to say that it is an immediate problem that demands immediate steps. Where Republicans are divided, about half say they aren't really sure whether climate change is really a problem, and the other half think that gradual steps can be taken to alleviate the impact. So it's a really big difference in understanding the problem of climate change, and then that in turn affects their views on whether it's a threat or not. And I think you see this a lot. I was just reviewing the transcripts from the second Republican debate, and there's that wide range, too, among the primary candidates on the same issue.
Did you say that half of Republicans don't believe it exists?
It's not half. It's about 44% say. So it's a long question. I'm not going to read it because it will put your listeners to sleep for the long question. But there are three statements, and then there's one statement that says, until we are sure that climate change is really a problem, we should not take any steps that would have economic costs. And that's 44% of Republicans. So there's a lot in that statement. Some of it is because there's economic costs, but also there's that first phrase, until we are sure that climate change is really a problem. So that's why I say I think that they question whether it is an issue that needs immediate attention.
I know it's outside the range of the survey, but let me ask you this because I'm sure you have thoughts on it. When you do have someone like the Pope, and there's a big thing for him to become, he's going to get enormous amount of press attention. Who is it who can move the needle on an issue like that? If the Pope comes and talks about that forcefully and beautifully before the U.S. Congress, does that move people's opinion, or are we so entrenched in what we believe that it's hard to move the needle on any of these issues?
So the Pope is viewed very positively by the American public. We haven't surveyed on that, but there have been quite a few surveys recently that show among Catholics in particular, but also Americans in general, have a pretty positive view of the Pope. But when it comes down to climate change, it's really these partisan differences that might overlap to some extent that affect the views of climate change. So that may overlap with conservative political views if you are possibly more on the religious continuum. But I think where the Pope would have the most impact is on Catholics themselves. I think that is the group that would probably be most willing to shift their position.
And in terms of the Iran nuclear deal, many of the Republican candidates are saying they would tear it up on the first day in office in their administration. What are partisan viewpoints on how the United States should deal with the possibility of Iran getting a nuclear weapon and whether or not this deal is good the way that it is?
Well, actually, the possibility of Iran obtaining a nuclear weapon is a top threat among Democrats and Republicans. It's a bit higher among Republicans, but a majority of Democrats also think it is a top threat. But there are different views on the deal itself. We conducted our survey before the specific deal was finalized, and at that time, our poll and several others showed that a majority overall supported a deal with Iran to limit its nuclear enrichment and in return for lifting some of the sanctions. But since then, attitudes have fallen really starkly, and now it all depends on the wording of the survey. A lot depends on the timing. A lot depends on how much information is in the question. So now opinion has shifted. It's not as positive overall, and many more people say they don't know how they feel. But the same general trend of Democrats being more supportive of the deal is that still holds. So Democrats are still more supportive than Republicans, and in some cases majorities. Again, it depends on the question. There's been a lot of different types of questions. But one interesting thing that I'm actually writing about now is that among Republicans themselves, at least at the time we did the survey, people who consider themselves strong Republicans are much more opposed than those who consider themselves weak Republicans.
Mm. And what causes opinion?
And you saw that in the debate.
Right.
There was some people were making some noises that some of the candidates like Rand Paul and Kasich sounded a little bit more in support of the nuclear agreement than people like Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio.
Right. And what causes, when you said there was more favorable response a little while ago, what caused the opinion to shift here so that it's not viewed as favorably now as when you did the survey?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. First of all, the deal was finalized. So once it's finalized, there was a lot more in the newspapers about it. People started paying more attention to it. There's a lot more debate and criticism of it, with certain political figures coming out against or for it. So that makes people look for more information about it. And then because of these elite discussions, talking heads and other political observers, people started to wonder whether they knew enough about it, or so that's where they would maybe go into the don't know category, or they, maybe there was some sense of fear about it that they didn't know before. So once something becomes real, Americans often will go to look for more information about it, and sometimes that, you know, the more you know, the less you know kind of approach.
Mm-hmm. The subject of immigration, my goodness, is there a difference of opinion on this? Your survey shows nearly half of Republicans believe that illegal immigrants should be required to leave their jobs and depart the country.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true. Where Democrats are more likely to support, actually a majority, support giving illegal workers a path to citizenship, either with some conditions or just or without. And this is a big, big issue, second to climate change in the percentage gap between Republicans and Democrats. But again, I'm looking a little bit more closely now at the Republicans, and there are some divisions. Again, it's really the strong Republicans who are more likely to favor deportation than weak Republicans who are more mixed.
We're going to welcome-
This is definitely one of the biggest issues in the debates. Right?
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. We're looking this hour at a survey that was done by our guest, really, Dina Smeltz, and it's from the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. It looks at the partisan divide, political partisanship, and U.S. foreign policy, and centers on immigration. Most everybody agrees that we face two major threats. 60% agree, Republicans and Democrats, a major terrorist attack in the U.S. by violent Islamic extremist groups, a big threat that we face, and more broadly, international terrorism among the most critical threats are facing the country. When we look at the Iran nuclear deal, we have a partisan divide here. We have a huge partisan divide when it comes to climate change and when it comes to immigration in the country. We'll also look at establishing an independent Palestinian state on the West Bank and Gaza, and also a military edge in the world. What kind of importance should we place on forceful approaches to achieve U.S. aims and to protect our interests all around the world? We welcome your phone calls. Would you agree that those threats, aforementioned threats, are the most significant that we face right now? And do you see a partisan divide in terms of how we face those threats? What about climate change? It's no wonder that we're having a hard time dealing with that issue when you look at the huge partisan divide on that. Same goes for immigration. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We always love to read your comments there. And we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for Dina. Dina Smeltz is Senior Fellow, Public Opinion and Foreign Policy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. And we're talking about the survey that she did, America Divided, Political Partisanship, and U.S. Foreign Policy. And let's go to Michael in Madison, our first caller. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Well, I would like to start with, I definitely think that there is a dramatic partisan divide between a lot of these issues. I see it in the friends I have who fall on different party lines than I do, as well as just people I know kind of tangentially in life. I think that's a really intense split that we have going on. But in terms of the actual most important kind of issues facing America today, I think climate change is kind of one of those, but almost more importantly, the stewardship of our kind of environmental resources. Here in Wisconsin especially, we really need to take care of our water resources. We're seeing, you know, what happens in California when you don't manage your water resources very well. And if we don't pay attention to these things, I think we're going to just see dramatic declines in all kinds of economic opportunities, as well as just our ability to actually deal with changing environments. You know, if we don't have the resources maintained, our changing environment is going to become more of an issue than it would if we have, you know, the ability to actually grow different kinds of crops on different kinds of soils or tap into new aquifers.
Thank you, Michael, very much for the call. When you look at climate change, obviously water resources is one of the issues that falls in that category, Dina. Does the survey look at that? And it certainly is a worldwide issue.
Yeah, thanks, Michael, for that question. And I'm glad that you found some validation of our poll results among your friends and people you know. It's interesting, usually you see a lot of partisan divide, or we talk about partisan divide a lot on domestic policy, but not always foreign policy. So it's interesting for us to dig a little deeper and find these differences. We don't ask a lot about the access to water and water, the stewardship of environmental resources. We do, however, we did find that among Democrats specifically, one of their top five foreign policy goals is to improve access to clean water for the world's population. And usually hunger is something that's also pretty far up there among the Democrat agenda. And I do want to say, when I'm talking about the top five policy goals and top five threats, I'm just talking about those that are the critical threats or the very important foreign policy goal, because in general, majorities think all of these things are at least somewhat important, or important but not critical. So that's really about it that we have in the survey. However, the Chicago Council itself is very involved on this issue. You know, we sit right on Lake Michigan, the largest natural freshwater lake in the country, if not the world. So this is something that our senior fellow, Michael Taboris, is looking into a lot more deeply. So I would urge you to look on our website, www.thechicagocouncil.org, and see some of his work on that issue as well.
Thank you, Michael, for the call. Betty in Madison, hi.
Hi. I wondered if you could give us a little bit more of a nuanced picture of Republican and Democrat in terms of demographics, because I keep wondering if education level, gender, age might also be really very important factors.
Sure, that's a great question, Betty. Generally, the biggest differences are on diversity in terms of race, an ethnic background. The most diverse are Republicans, which are 63% white, 16% black, and 13% Hispanic, and that's been true really since 1978. Republicans are much less diverse. They are 88% white, 2% black, and 5% Hispanic. About age range, the average age is really not that different. It's around 50% among all of them. And gender, in our survey, it's really across the board, we have a bit more females than males, and I think that's just because our survey sample is then weighted across according to the census. So we don't find that many differences. Overall, the biggest one is in terms of diversity of race. And then in education, I believe that this is all in the report if you go online, but I think that Democrats might be slightly higher educated, but it really depends. You know, you have to look across socioeconomic categories. We thought we would find a lot more differences among age group in particular, but we really didn't. It's really kind of split across.
Thank you. I just wondered if the in terms of the extremes of either of the groups, you saw much difference in the way of education, especially on climate.
We haven't really dug that much into that yet, but it's a really great question. Like I said, the attitudes toward climate are very related to whether people believe it exists or not, or whether it's really a problem, to be literal to our question, or not. And that probably does have an education component to it. But that's a really good question that we should look into.
Thank you.
Thanks, Betty, very much for the call. Let's move to establishing an independent Palestinian state on the West Bank and Gaza. 61% of Democrats say yes, 60% of Republicans opposed. I wonder if those numbers have changed over recent years. I would have thought not that long ago that most people would have been in favor of that.
Well, actually, it's been divided for a really long time, and it still is divided overall. And what we found is really the most recent shift is among Democrats. Across each of the partisan groups, Democrats, Independents, and Republicans, we conducted surveys in 98 and 2002. And opinion among all three were divided. And it's only in 2015 when we reran this question 13 years later, we find that a majority of Democrats support the creation of a Palestinian state compared to just 29% of Republicans and 42% of independents. And that's a shift. And a related shift is attitudes toward Israel's role in the Middle East. And we don't have a trend on this. We only asked it in 2015. But where 41% of Democrats say that Israel plays a positive role, so a majority say it plays a negative role, Republicans are much more positive. 61% say that Israel plays a positive role in resolving the key problems facing the Middle East. And I think this may have something to do with the lack of movement toward a Palestinian state, which has affected Democrats' criticism of Israel's role. That said, it's very important to keep in mind that there's a great well of goodwill among all partisans toward Israel, and majorities favorable views of the country.
Thanks, Betty, very much for your call. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, John. Terrorist attacks or alleged terrorist attacks are always a means for the government to install a tyranny and a propaganda network. Like in England, the 1520 Guy Fawkes Day, where they had the Protestants set bombs underneath the Parliament, and they said, "Oh, the Catholics did it," you know, so they could attack the Catholic Church, attack Spain and France. And then you had Moscow in 2001, big supposed Muslim attack in Moscow that allowed Putin to destroy Chechnya. And then the 9/11, and the 19 Arabs didn't do it, let's put it that way. And then the Reichstag fire that was supposedly started by the Nazis, and they blamed the communists for it. So they outlawed the Communist Party.
What's your point?
And they outlawed the Communist Party,
John,
and it became a majority.
John, what's your point in terms of our discussion?
Pardon?
What's your point in terms of our discussion, the partisan divide in foreign policy?
The parties should be more parties, because the amount of it's like the consensus Council on Foreign Relations policy, and then you got the negative, the against, but it's a controlled opposition. It's not a real opposition.
All right. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for you right now. We're talking about the partisan divide, America divided, political partisanship, and U.S. foreign policy, and trying to get a sense from you where you stand in terms of the most important foreign policy questions that we're facing right now and that will be the focus of the presidential campaign that will continue for some time to come. Are you worried about terrorist attacks? Do you think that there do you fall into a partisan divide when it comes to how you think that we should be dealing with that particular issue? What about climate change? What about immigration? Two areas where the partisan divide is indeed very, very large, the largest among all the other issues. What about the Iran nuclear deal? What about our military edge in the world? We'll talk about that now with the author of the report, Dina Smeltz. And welcome your phone calls, too. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our email is talk@wpr.org. What were you getting at when you asked about military edge in the world and how we should use our military to approach conflict?
Sure. So this is one of the guiding philosophies that Republicans and Democrats seem to differ on to some extent. So Republicans are more likely than Democrats to say that maintaining U.S. military superiority is a very important goal. And this comes through in a lot of their focus on hard power, so that the way that they prefer to respond to specific international situations. So Republicans are more likely than Democrats to support the use of U.S. troops in three particular situations: to stop Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon, to defend Israel if it were attacked by its neighbors, and to fight violent Islamic extremist groups. And then, especially strong Republicans are more likely than others to support the use of force against terrorism. But as I said before, this is one. Terrorism is one issue where majorities across all partisan groups are supportive of using force. Now, on the other hand, Democrats, they also value military superiority and understand that it's an important way for us to keep an edge in our security. But they are much more likely than Republicans to say that diplomatic actions that include strengthening the United Nations, engaging in high-level diplomatic visits, signing free trade agreements, and providing economic aid are effective. They're also more likely to support signing international treaties, building new alliances, using sanctions than Republicans are. So this kind of helps explain why on each of the issues we talked about, Democrats tend to support signing the nuclear deal with Iran. They support lifting the economic embargo against Cuba, where Republicans often are more likely to support the more forceful approach.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that when you look at what the response has been to fighting what everybody would agree is our number one threat, and that's Islamic extremist groups, that we seem to be at a loss as to what is the effective strategy, be it a Republican idea or a Democratic idea, that whatever strategies have been used over the past quite a few years now don't seem to be extremely effective. Maybe we do need, as our last caller suggested, a different point of view from somebody who's not politically affiliated.
From what our data show, Americans seem open to almost any type of response that's offered. So I'm sure if some new ideas came up that might also find favor. But, this is one issue that just Americans really see it as a direct threat. And then, and to John's, to the previous caller's point, this is one area where Americans are willing to give up their privacy for security.
Yes.
And so they really, they don't mind the NSA collecting data as long as it's going to keep us safe. So I think it is a really tough issue, and it would be great to have some new approaches, I'm
right.
sure.
Let's go to Tracy in Wauwatosa next. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. I've always mostly been considering myself a Democrat and voted for a Democrat. I care very much about the environment for us and future generations. And at this point in my life, I've also considered different issues that are occurring. And, home security, and since 9/11, I've steered more right. And what I wish was somebody who is running who cares about the environment, cares about the economy, but also cares about our safety and our country. And it just doesn't seem like I can ever find someone who cares about all those issues at the same time. I listen to public radio, and then I also listen to conservative radio, and I take issues on both sides that I agree on, and I have a hard time voting because no one agrees.
Nobody. Maybe you need to run for office, Tracy.
Maybe. I don't know. But it seems like I've always heard, no, you either have to be a Democrat or Republican. And I'm like, oh, why can't there be someone who cares about economy, the environment, and, home security all at once? And, it always seems to be so far right or so far left. And I have a hard time, but I tend to vote with issues. And now that I have kids, I And since 9/11, I know there's always, like the one caller said, it's not who it seems like that's causing problems. But I don't want our country attacked, because how can we care about our environment if we're going to be, you know, we have to worry about other issues that are more important. So
I have a couple points.
I don't know. I don't seem to find many people that think like that. I'm wondering, why not?
Yeah. Do you?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's, for politicians, and especially now during the campaign, they're looking at what is most important to average Americans. And foreign policy usually isn't at the super top of their list. It's usually bread and butter issues of jobs, economy. So that's one thing you're seeing. People have to make trade-offs in what messages they're putting across, because they have to appeal to a broad spectrum of voters. And then in terms of the environment and economy, that's always a trade-off. You know, Gallup surveys have conducted for a really long time questions that pit environmental protection against economic development. And in periods where the United States is in a recession or having difficult economic times, people tend to stress economics. And then in times when, like now, and we found this in the Chicago Council survey as well, people, when the economy recovers, then they can return their focus back to the environment. And I think this is just a natural state for people who are most concerned about their family's well-being.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also in the report talking about what the candidate's responsibility should be, and you issue a challenge for presidential candidates to balance an appeal to the base with an appeal to the median voter. What exactly do you mean by that?
So it's interesting now. Looking at, so we've already had the Republican primary, so I keep using that as an example. It will be interesting to see if the environment does come up and climate change in once we have the Democratic debates. What I mean by that is that right now you see different appeals on different slices of opinion, like the Iran agreement. We're seeing some candidates are saying this is the most terrible deal, and other candidates are saying, well, we should give it a chance and see, and then we can always slap on sanctions or keep the military option on the table if Iran cheats on the matter. So we're seeing different micro-targeting of messages. But once we get beyond the primary, candidates will have to appeal to the voters who are not at extremes, but who are more at the median in terms of overall opinion. And so this will create some shifts. And I think what's happening now is that the Bernie Sanders effect is having a pull on the left among Democrats, and then sort of the immigration is a really good example of what's happening with the Republican primary debates, that it's pulling attitudes towards the right. So it's going to have some kind of effect on what kind of final presidential candidates we have and their platforms.
It is interesting, though, isn't it, from the first two Republican debates, Dina, the amount of attention that has been paid to foreign policy issues. I think it's been substantial.
Yes, it has been really substantial. I agree. And it's different than previous, most recent presidential elections, when things were much more focused on the economy and recovering our economy. And 538.com, which is Nate Silver, they've actually posted several times the top questions that were asked. And I think the last primary, 16 of all the questions, which is a large portion, were all on foreign policy, followed by immigration, which is also to some extent a foreign policy issue. So I agree, it's been really interesting. I think that is partially because the economy has recovered, and partially because there's so many international crises going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
at one time.
I want to follow up a little more on what Tracy said when she was looking for a candidate who maybe had more nuanced views on a variety of issues. Do you find when you do these surveys that when you look at a partisan divide, you can go straight down the line, and if you're a Republican, you will answer most questions a certain way if you're a Democrat? Are there any crossover here where a Democrat might want to have a much tougher military role in the U.S. and Republican has a more nuanced view on climate change, or are people becoming very rigid in adhering to a party line?
That's a great question. So among Republicans, we do see some differences in opinion. I mentioned some of them earlier. The Chicago Council survey found that the Republicans, whether you're a weak Republican or a strong Republican, there are different views on the Iran deal, on immigration. Generally, the weaker Republicans are closer toward, sometimes closer toward where Democrats are, but definitely closer to the middle on, as I said, immigration, the Iran deal, the Cuba lifting the embargo on Cuba. Democrats are much more cohesive in their views, and the only issues where we see that kind of divide are on the role of Israel, whether Israel plays a positive or negative role in the Middle East, and strong Democrats are more critical. And then the other issue is also climate change, but not to the same degree as with Republicans, but just that weaker Democrats are a little less inclined to say that we should take immediate action, but they say that we should take immediate or gradual action. So it's not that they fall into the questioning whether it exists. It's more about how immediate we need to address it. So in general, the Democrats and the Democratic candidates almost have an easier time of the campaign season because Democratic voters are so similar in their opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, there aren't 17 of them, or however
exactly.
many there are these days. There
exactly.
are a lot.
Exactly. Well, yeah. we have one left.
That's
yesterday.
Right. Yeah. We welcome more phone calls for Dina. We're speaking with Dina Smeltz this hour. She's a senior fellow for public opinion and foreign policy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. And she has been for other organizations as well, the U.S. State Department, at many years of experience in designing and fielding international social, political, and foreign policy survey. The survey we're talking about is America Divided, Political Partisanship and U.S. Foreign Policy, and we're welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Do you find when you look at the presidential field that most Republicans have a certain few variations, but a certain take on issues of the day, like terrorism, global warming, immigration, the creation of a Palestinian state, an embargo on Cuba, and Democrats have a different set? Do you see differences of opinion among the candidates? Do you see a strong, and do you identify as a strong Republican or a strong Democrat on how you view these issues in the world that are of top concern? If you had to talk about what are your top concerns when it comes to foreign policy, is it indeed a terrorist threat? Is it global warming? Is it immigration? What is it? And who best addresses the issues? Who do you get behind and say, I'm for this guy or gal because they're going to attack something the way that I think it should be attacked? So here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. Tracy, thanks for your call. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have time for a few more phone calls. Dina Smeltz, Senior Fellow Public Opinion and Foreign Policy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, is our guest, and we're welcoming your phone calls. Dina, is this an unusual year with the interest in all the foreign policy issues? Isn't it usually domestic concerns that are most pressing for us?
Yes, this is a really interesting year for us. The rise of ISIS in the Middle East, the continuing crisis in Syria, the resulting refugee crisis in Europe, mm-hmm. And then Russia's continued destabilization of Ukraine, all make this an important foreign policy year. And as the debates show, the questions are really heavily skewed toward foreign policy issues. And I think that is in part because so many things are going on in the world right now. It can seem like an unmanageable crisis. Or also that the economy is no longer at the forefront of concern.
Oh.
And Republican candidates, for example, can't really attack the president on that particular aspect. But so that they're really focusing on a lot of the foreign policy dimensions.
And what about the Syrian refugee crisis? Will the number of refugees we allow into the United States from these war-torn regions or from other areas become a significant issue in this campaign?
It could. In 2014, the Chicago Council asked a question about what Americans would do for Syria, and only about 30% of Americans supported accepting more refugees. Now, the current situation could go either way. It's hard to say. I mean, now that there's images of people suffering on camera and being reported, that might make people a little more positive toward accepting some refugees. Also, you know, a question that might put it into context of how many refugees Europe is taking in versus what we have, that could also skew attitudes. But the initial time, their initial reaction was that we shouldn't accept more refugees.
Wayne in Marshfield is our next caller. Hi, Wayne.
Hi. I'm wondering if term limits would have any effect. It would reduce some of the party loyalty and concern about getting reelected and so on, instead of representatives and senators being willing to step back and view things in a more realistic manner.
That might that's actually a really interesting question. That might affect people who vote on specific issues, but a lot of the polling, we don't really focus on political polling, but because we focus on foreign policy issues, but a lot of the polls I've seen have shown that a good percentage of people actually vote on personality, not on issues. So I don't know that term limits would necessarily affect them. But in terms of policy, that could be.
Thanks, Wayne. Wayne, what do you think? Before we say goodbye to you, if you're still there.
Yeah.
Wayne?
Well, I think politicians are so interested in getting reelected. Sometimes they want to toe the party line because they're going to get supported the next election, especially in the House. That's every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure they can be 100% honest on how they're going to view any issue, foreign or domestic. So that's why I think term limits might give us a little, might break the, fix the system in some fashion since it's broken.
I think it's interesting that Joe Biden has said if he would run, he would only run for one term. So apparently it must be an issue for some people for him to say that. So mm-hmm. It's a really interesting point.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Wayne, so much for the call. Do you have another one of these surveys coming up soon, Dina?
We will have one in a year. We used to conduct the survey every 4 years and every 2 years, and now we're committed to conducting the survey every year. And so we will be back next fall. But we also have several short reports coming out and that have come out. We've had one about attitudes toward Cuba, American attitudes towards Iran, another one about terrorism. They're all on our website, and we have a big report coming out on Asia. So please keep us in mind if you are wondering what the American voters are thinking.
Well, we'll do just that. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you so much for having me, Kathleen.
Dina Smelt, Senior Fellow, Public Opinion and Foreign Policy at the Chicago Council on global affairs. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and KP as well for doing all the on-air production here in our studios. We're in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio, hour two of our program today, a topic we've talked about frequently, but it's a big issue in the country, and that's inequality. Our guest, the author of Plutocracy in America, How Increasing Inequality Destroys the Middle Class and Exploits the Poor. So that's coming up for the second hour of our program this lovely Tuesday. Thanks for listening to this hour. More ahead.